Let's bring in the truculent one, Mr. Brian Burke. Good morning, Brian.
Morning, guys.
We're Chris Tanev. You know, here he is making $4.5 million, expiring contract, UFA. Can you find somebody you figure on the market that can do what he can, or is this a major problem for the Canucks that they're dealing with? How do you view it?
Well, I think he's a really important player, but it's like buying furniture. Not only do you have to like the furniture, it's got to fit in the room. And so in a hard cap system, you're often forced to make decisions that you don't like. Like, you let guys go that you really don't want to go. But if they can't fit under the cap, they go. And I've had to deal with it. So my first year at Anaheim was the first year of the cap. And we started making hard decisions right then. And simple fact is, he may not fit, but I think he's a really important player. I really like him. I think someone else will sign him if they let him go. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the cap's going to be. I know they're talking about a flat cap, which I think is absurd. I think there's going to have to be a salary rollback or a massive increase in escrow that effectively rolls salaries back. I don't think we're going to touch revenue levels from past seasons for at least 24 months. So we're headed for some hard times and hard decisions. And Jim Benning is going to have to make some of those hard decisions because they're right up against it. And they did a good job building their team so they were in contention. But now they're going to be faced with some hard decisions. I think the goalie's number one, and I'd put the defenseman second and third.
Is the toughest part of being a GM, there's a lot of difficult decisions, but is it a player like Chris when you know in all likelihood he fits there, great, but the injuries have been long. He's likely on the back nine of his career. Is that the toughest part of a GM, Berkey, to just go, maybe we've got his best days, like the decline, and we know the doctor's report. Is that a tough decision to make for a GM when a player is in that 30, 31 age and you know the history?
Yeah, it's tough because this is a guy that he's injured because he plays the right way. Like, there are players who get injured because they're injury prone, but this is a guy who's not injury prone. He's a warrior, and he's had injuries because he plays the right way. And so, yeah, it's hard because you're saying goodbye to a guy potentially who's given you everything every night, and those are people you respect and you grow close to and you admire. But at the end of the day, it's a salary cap. I mean, I let Ruslan Salé go in Anaheim, and he was an absolute warrior for us. He perished in that terrible plane crash in Russia.
Yeah.
But Ruslan Salé was a warrior for us, and I remember talking to him. We were at a game in San Jose, and he blocked a shot, and he got it right above his eye. And he had, like, I don't know, 25 stitches, and his eye closed up, and he couldn't finish the trip. I think the team went to Vancouver. I flew back to Anaheim with Rusty, with Ruslan Salé. And we shared a limo back to Anaheim from LAX. And I remember talking to him, and he said, I suppose you're going to trade me at the deadline. I said, no, I need you for the run. Like, we went to the conference finals that year. And I said, I need you for the run, Rusty, but I can't keep you. I will not be able to pay you what you're going to get on the open market. I will help you get the money, but you got to help this team make a run. And he did. And we talked him up to every team that called about him. We said what a great guy he was. He got a big deal from Florida. I hated to see him go, but it didn't work on our team.
Brian Burke with us here on Sportsnet 650. I kind of want to dive into Premier John Horgan's comments about really trying to push forward to make Vancouver an attractive hub city for the National Hockey League, much like we saw from Alberta Premier Jason Kenney. But before we go down that road, I'm going to take a hard left here, because before I forget this, I meant to ask you, somebody just texted in about this, and I was talking to one of your former players who wanted me to also ask you this as well. It's funny how this has come up twice in the last 2 days, but Mika Kiprusoff, there are rumblings out there about him possibly being a Canuck at one time when you were here in charge. How close was that to actually happening?
Never. It was never close.
Never?
Do I stutter?
Well, I hope if you could elaborate. No,
James, where did
no
you
conversations?
Hear it was close?
Nothing.
Okay. It was never close.
Okay.
They're not going to trade a goalie of that caliber in division. Are you nuts?
Yeah, well, right. Berkey, would like me to answer that one? Yeah, I mean, I'm with him pretty much 3 hours a day.
No, but when he was in San Jose, Yeah, the Flames got him out of San Jose, but even when he was in San Jose before, he'd kind of established himself as Mika Kiprusoff?
No.
Okay. All right, thank you for clarifying that. I was waiting for by the book.
There was some reports last
night. Well, he's not going to be mentioned in the book either.
There were some reports last night that people saying, oh, it's confirmed, Las Vegas will be a hub city. Now, those have not been substantiated. It's social media doing what social media does. But certainly the push has been made by our province to see if the feds will help and go, hey, we are set for the NHL to have it here. Berkey, I wonder, it hasn't been another good 48 hours for COVID-19 south of the border. And you have said, and I agree with you, because of time zones, you know, you need to have somewhere out east to play. Is there any way that the NHL, if they go, Vegas is a great fit and BC in North America is the right place as far as safety, that they might go to two time zones and avoid the eastern time zone in your mind?
Well, I think they're going to go where it's safest for players and they can produce the best environment. I think time zones would be a secondary consideration. I would love there to be a hub in Canada. I really think that would be good for the game, good for our country. And I would love to see that. And I really appreciate the push that the two Western premiers are making. And I don't understand the quarantine issue. I really don't. I've been saying this on the radio for 2 weeks. Like, I understand I'm a Canadian citizen and resident. I do not want a plane full of contaminated people landing in Canada. I don't. But right now, there's very little restriction on the air travel that does come in. And the fact is, if it's a plane with 50 tested and proven negative COVID carriers, let the plane land. Like, this isn't about a special rule for hockey players. I'd have the same view if it was they're going to bring 50 scientists in to help battle the epidemic, and they're all tested. They're all clear of the virus. We know that. Let them land. Let them go to work. So to me, I don't understand. I really don't understand the Canadian government's view on this and the solution that's been proposed to continue to self-quarantine in a bubble makes perfect sense to me.
What do you think is the better play from a Canadian standpoint? Obviously, you worked here in Van, you worked in Toronto, you spent enough time rolling through Edmonton over the years. Is there a city that would be more ideal, do you think, to make this happen?
Well, I think if you look at the factors, I think it's a dead heat on facilities. In other words, the arena in Vancouver is beautiful. The arena in Edmonton is beautiful. There are nice hotels very close by or contiguous to the arena in both cities. Same thing in Toronto. If Toronto applies for hub, you could walk underground, never go outside to the Royal York Hotel right across the street from Scotiabank Arena. So it's a dead heat on facilities. So then you go to what practice ice, you know, practice rinks. So you've got UBC, you've got, I don't know, Britannia, I don't know what the closest rinks are in Vancouver. It's been a while since I was there. But you've got adequate practice. If you have that many teams, you need practice ice. I can tell you from being involved in the Olympics, that was as big a headache for the Olympic organizers as the regular rink in Sochi and in Vancouver. In fact, in Sochi, they built a practice rink next to, right beside the facility with four sheets of ice just so the teams could have adequate practice time. So I think that's a dead heat. So then it comes down to the prevalence of the virus. And Alberta, I think, wins that battle in terms of having the fewest cases. But the time zone thing then comes in. I have said from the get-go it should be one Canadian hub and one U.S. hub, one Eastern time and one Mountain or Pacific time. To accommodate the broadcast schedule, but I'm not sure where they're going with this. They're being very close-mouthed about the search, the league is. Like even Elliot Friedman, who he knows everything, he finds out everything, he doesn't know where they're going to go.
When do you feel as a GM you need to find out? Like how long can they wait?
Well, if they're talking the first week in August, there's still time. If they're talking the first week in August as far as when training camps are going to open, or even the last week in July, there's still time. Because these hotels aren't opening anytime soon, to my knowledge. So there's still time, but I don't know how much time. And if the 14-day quarantine exists, you know, Brad Schlemmen came out yesterday and said they're looking at U.S. sites, just like Jim Benning said a month ago. Mm-hmm. They're looking at U.S. sites for training camp because they don't want to deal with the 14-day quarantine, which, again, I want to stress this because people always say, oh, hockey players. They're going to make a special exemption for hockey players. And Danny Sedin had surgery, and he jumped the queue, and going back 20 years. And people are get up outraged about this. But the fact is, I'm not talking about making an exemption for hockey players. I'm talking about making an exemption for people that we know are safe.
I mean, they've got to be on the clock here, though, right? I mean, they've got to start getting some concrete details here sooner rather than later, wouldn't you think, Brian? I mean, if you're going to try to pull this off, get training camps up and running, and then to actually try to get a postseason underway, you know, you'll push back the 2021 season as much as possible, but at some point they've got to be on the clock here, aren't they?
Well, I think they're on the clock for sure, but I don't think if you're saying do they have 48 hours, no, they've probably got 2 weeks. But yeah, they're on the clock. 2 weeks is not a lot of time when you're planning a major event. So you've got to do hotel, the kitchen staff. You've got to make provisions for all of these people that are going to come in contact with the players to be tested and be safe. The testing bill alone is going to run into the millions of dollars for doing the playoffs. They're talking about testing all 50 people that are part of the bubble. So you got 20 players plus the Black Aces, plus your trainers, plus your coaches, plus your doctors. So you're over 40 right there. And then you got GM, assistant GM. So you get to say 48 people. They're saying 50 max in each bubble, each contingent from a team. And they're talking about testing them daily. So that's 50 tests a day times 16 teams in the play-in round. And the tests are $140 U.S. each, something like that. You're talking a massive amount of money. So they're on the clock. They've got to figure out testing. But I don't think it's that on the clock is that Gary Bettman has said to his staff, look, we need a decision by Sunday night. And they still think they have a couple weeks. And that gives them some time to see where the disease is flaring up, too, because we're seeing major spikes in the U.S.
Yeah, no, it hasn't been good at all since Memorial Day long weekend. As a GM, do you think it's an unfair advantage if some of your players, I mean, there's a lot of guys in Toronto skating, a lot in Tampa. Canucks, obviously, there's only three of them here in Vancouver. I know it's voluntary. It's no more than six. Is that an advantage for teams that have more players in their city as far as offseason and they can get together?
No, I think there's still lots of time. Like the notion, I think people should realize what an NHL player's body does on a 365-day basis. Okay, so after the season, say they miss the playoffs or they go out in the first round, a player will take a week, 10 days, even 2 weeks off. But a player, his day off is probably an hour of cardio. These guys, they're machines. I remember last year during the bye week, a bunch of the Calgary Flames went to Mexico. And I asked Gio, I asked Mark Giordano, what was the routine like? They were doing 90 minutes in the gym, all the players, every morning. And so, like, these guys, they don't get out of shape. They get out of game shape. They're not in playing condition shape, but these guys don't get out of shape. They work year-round. So there's plenty of time here. I wouldn't worry. If I were a GM, I'd say, like, apparently now in Ontario, I just heard this, or maybe it's in Alberta too, groups can skate up to 10. I think, work out up to 10. The league's protocol is stricter. But so, okay, if I'm the GM of Calgary and Mark Giordano, who spends his summer in Ontario, if he's skating with 10 guys, 10 NHL players, I don't care if they're Flames players. I don't care. He doesn't have to come back. So, no, I don't. We're overanalyzing this to death, guys.
Before we wind things down with you, you were in a conversation. There was quite the headlines in the last couple of days, and it got a lot of traction here with respect to Anson Carter and his, you know, kind of sharing his experience in Vancouver with his time with the Twins. He only had the one-year deal. They didn't offer much money, you know, when he was looking for a raise after a 30-goal campaign and suggested that race played a part. You were gone by that point, but you obviously were pretty familiar with the organization. What was your reaction to or your takeaway from that?
Well, I didn't push him on that because I think Anson Carter is a great guy and a very believable guy. He had 33 goals, if I'm not mistaken, playing with the Twins. Yep. Yep. And I was going to ask him, why'd you leave Vancouver? Then he answered the question before I got a chance to ask it. I don't doubt his story one bit. And I think that, but I also know that I've never been in a meeting. I will tell you this, and this is why I'm probably not a good expert on this. I've never been in a meeting where someone mentioned a player's race. where someone said, oh, we're drafting this kid from Ontario. Oh, and by the way, he's African-Canadian. Like, it was, I've never heard those words in a scouting meeting. Nobody cared. Nobody cared the least bit about a player's race or if he was Asian or if he was First Nations. No one ever talked about that. It was never a factor. So I'm sure, I believe Anson in terms of what he believes, but I got to tell you, knowing Dave Nonis, I've never heard race discussed in a room. It is now, which is a healthier debate. I think we need to talk about all of this stuff, but never once in a meeting did someone mention a player's race to me, and I would have slapped him if he did. Someone said, oh, there's this kid, he's a right wing, he can skate, he can shoot. Oh, and by the way, he's African-Canadian. I would have said, why did you say that? Why would you even bring that up? So I believe Anson, but knowing Dave Nonis and knowing the Canucks' values, there are probably other factors too.
Yeah, I mean, covering it at that point, that never came up. And to your point, it's good these dialogues are happening. What are your thoughts on Evander Kane and those coming up and saying, hey, we're going to do a little bit more working with the NHL and have our own group and see if we can, you know, lend the voice to make sure that everyone feels equal in our sport? Obviously, you must be pleased that the players are showing their initiative on their own.
Well, absolutely. All of this, the great thing about what's happened in the last 17 days is that this is not going to go away. Like, after the Rodney King riots, it went away. And this is going to produce meaningful, substantial, substantive change and permanent change. And it already has in the form of legislation that's been introduced, and methods are changing on police forces, and they're talking about this and that. Like, it's already, the change is already in the works. Like, it's already happening. And that's a good thing. So I support the Alliance. I think it's great. I think part of it is, like, I grew up in Minnesota, right? There was hardly any black kids at my school. I didn't know any black kids when I was in high school. And so I don't understand. I think I do. I try to. I empathize. But at the end of the day, I probably don't get it. So all of these discussions are helpful.
Great conversation as always, sir. Thanks for checking in with us, and be safe out there. And we'll bug you again next week, all right?
Thanks, guys.